Think Pennsylvania's leaders should be doing something different, better? Now's the chance to have your voice heard. This is Ask Governor Wolf, a new live statewide show by Keystone Crossroads. I'm Kevin McCrory, and we'll spend this hour with Pennsylvania Governor Tom Wolf, talking about the state's most pressing issues. This is a frantic time in Harrisburg, with Wolf pushing a $34.1 billion yearly budget ahead of the end-of-month deadline.
It asks for no new taxes, no new burdens on our citizens, while at the same time increasing dramatically our investments in the public goods that will make life better for all Pennsylvanians.
Many issues are on the table. We'll have PA Capitol reporter Katie Meyer of WITF here to help us sort it all out. And we want to hear from you. What would you make a priority for the state? Call us at 1-800-729-7532 or hit us up on Twitter using the hashtag AskGovWolf. All this and more after NPR News. This is Ask Governor Wolf. I'm Kevin McCrory, editor of Keystone Crossroads. Governor Tom Wolf, thank you for joining us on this live statewide broadcast.
Thanks, Kevin. It's great to be with you.
Wonderful. Also joining us in studio today is our State House reporter, Katie Meyer of WITF.
Hello.
And Ed Mahan of PA Post.
Good to be here.
So, Governor Wolf, this is the first year of your second term in office. You've proposed a $34.1 billion budget. Republicans want a smaller number. What can you say to assure taxpayers in Pennsylvania that that money will be wisely spent?
Well, I think they can look at the first 4 years. I've done, a credible job. I've been in politics now for just a little over 4 years. Before that, I was in business. And I bring that same perspective to management of this great Commonwealth. And I think we need public goods. We need to invest in those public goods wisely, and that's what I've been trying to do.
Public education is obviously a third of that number. And there's a lot of debate constantly around whether that number should be higher and how those dollars are spent. And those decisions are often made at the local school district level. So there's a lot of oversight at the local level in addition to at the state level. So not surprisingly, this becomes an issue that we hear from people around the state all the time. I want to bring in a question we got from the field. We spoke to Erica Booker, mother of two from Upper Darby in Delaware County. She had this question for you.
I want to understand how you have school districts like this one, like Upper Darby, that don't seem to have as many opportunities as some of the other school districts in the state. What can be done for things to be a little more equal?
Yeah, Erica, right?
Erica.
That was a great question, and I agree with her. I think one of the problems we have, there are two big problems. One is that in Pennsylvania, the Commonwealth does not invest enough in education, which means that the bulk of public education spending has to come from local sources. And the poorer, the ones with the lower tax revenues, have a tougher time and therefore coming up with the funds they need to invest in public education. So places like Upper Darby do struggle. I think that's unfair.
So what's the fix?
Well, I think outside of Philadelphia, the basic way of raising money for education is the property tax. And I have been calling for property tax reform since I started running. My first budget, I actually presented a proposal for property tax reform. And I think it's one of those things that in Harrisburg, in the Capitol, there isn't anybody who doesn't think that's a really important issue. The question is, how do we do it? And that has kept people from actually coming up with a conclusion. So I think if we get to equitable property tax, we could find a real solution to the problems of school districts like Upper Darby.
I mean, in theory, that's the job as the leader of the state. You're saying that there's consensus on this issue, but for some reason it can't get resolved, so why not?
There's consensus on the idea that we need a solution. There's not consensus on how we actually address the issue. So, yeah, I keep pointing out I was elected governor, not dictator of Pennsylvania. So I have to work with 253 independently elected legislators, senators, and representatives. And it's all of our jobs to work together to come up with the best policies to address the issues like the one that Erica pointed out.
And when we talk about school funding inequities, we often talk about the school funding formula, which you signed into law, which attempts to smooth out those inequities. Some say we need to more rapidly advance that conversation so that we're not waiting decades for the inequities that have been baked into the cake to persist.
Yeah, and I agree with that. I think that's a fair argument. The problem is right now every new dollar goes out according to the fair funding formula, but that leaves a lot of money that goes out according to the old way that the government used to distribute the money. The question is, how do we get to 100% as quickly as possible?
And how?
One of the answers might lie in property tax reform. There are a number of things that we have to do, but what I don't want to do is get to 100% fair funding if that, in fact, leads to somebody somewhere in Pennsylvania getting reduction in the investment in education we make in his or her school district.
And just so we're clear for listeners, when we're talking about property tax reform, we're essentially saying let's raise some state taxes, say a sales tax or an income tax, and use that revenue to replace the money that you're paying on the local level.
Yes, every suggestion for property tax reform calls, it's basically a shift from the local level to the state level, so that by definition calls for a reduction in the local taxes and the local share, but a corresponding increase at the state level.
Mm-hmm. And do you have a plan specifically that you would like to talk about to address that?
I don't want to talk about it. I actually presented it back in 2015, and I think that's the germ of a way to get to where we need to get. And conversations around that and other suggestions continue in Harrisburg. This is not something that people are dropping.
While we're on the subject of schools, you know, there's some people who say, especially with school infrastructure, you're talking about lead in buildings, you're talking about asbestos, crumbling infrastructure, that there's such a dire need that we need to make some sort of emergency fund for these schools. And Democrats have said, hey, we have a surplus right now, let's use some of that money. Is that something you support?
Not enough. That's not enough money. First of all, we do have a surplus, and I agree with the Republicans that we ought to put that into the rainy day fund, into our cookie jar,
because all of it.
Yeah, because right now we're in good economic times. This won't always be the case, so we ought to be saving this. But I've also proposed my Restore Pennsylvania plan, which is for $4.5 billion, not hundreds of millions of dollars, but billions of dollars, to go into programs that would help places, schools, for example, with lead paint problems, asbestos problems, mold problems, would help. We just heard about the flooding in northern New Jersey. We have a flood watch here in this area of Pennsylvania. We need to have money available to work to prevent flooding, and when it happens, to help people dig out from those floods. Pennsylvania doesn't have that right now, and that's more than the surplus we have right now. That's billions of dollars, and I have a plan, my Restore Pennsylvania plan, for doing that. And I agree, we need to do something.
And that you're trying to fund essentially by a tax on natural gas, shale tax.
Yeah. Now let me talk about that. Everyone in Pennsylvania pays a severance tax. We're just paying it to other states. When we fill up our tank with gasoline or diesel, or we use something made of plastic, the taxes from Texas, the severance tax in Texas or Alaska, Oklahoma, Louisiana, or Saudi Arabia, I guess they've nationalized their industry there in Venezuela, we pay them because what they have taken is embedded in the cost of the products that are made from stuff refined from their natural resource. Pennsylvania is the only place with a big resource, natural gas, without a severance tax.
But we have a local impact fee, which helps the local community.
We do have that, and we ought to keep that. So what I'm suggesting is that you add to that. That's right now generating about $190 million. I'm suggesting that we add to that $300 million. That would make that $490 million. Just by comparison, last year, Texas gas industry contributed in severance taxes $1.4 billion. That's the natural gas industry. So what I'm proposing at $490 million is a lot less than that. I want the gas industry to succeed, but I want them to have a stake, and I want every Pennsylvanian to share in the benefits of having this natural resource, and I think Restore Pennsylvania could do that.
I'm going to bring Katie Meyer into the conversation now. There's obviously skepticism around this plan, Katie.
Yeah, there is. And Governor, so while we're on Restore PA, one of the things that comes up again and again when Republicans and other people outside of your administration talk about this plan is how much debt it would accrue for the Commonwealth. So this is going to be a $4 billion plan. That's a borrow up front, and we're going to be paying that back for 20 years. How much debt is that actually going to incur?
There's a difference between debt. I mean, having been in business, when you're in business, you borrow money to invest in things that are going to actually improve your company. What I'm talking about here is not something that's going to be spent on consumption or just spending on idle things. It's on things that will actually make our state better, like getting lead out of schoolrooms, preventing floods and the damage that comes from flooding, bringing broadband to 800,000 Pennsylvanians who don't have it right now. I mean, we're in the 21st century. Doing things that could actually make Pennsylvania better. And I've tied this, unlike just sort of a general obligation, but this is tied to a specific flow of cash from a tax that now does not exist in Pennsylvania. While we pay for all the schools and the roads and bridges and all these other states, they're not paying for ours. All I'm asking for is something that we can have them share with us.
Well, and this is also going to be a tax that, you know, we are tying ourselves now to the natural gas industry for 20 years. And we have a question here from Tim Spies. He's an activist based in Lancaster. And he asks, why is Governor Wolf proposing his Restore PA plan when he knows that funding will require us to be locked into natural gas development for the next 20 years? Climate change experts have said that this is something we can't afford to do.
Yeah, it is a natural resource that we have here, and the lightweight products that are going to go into the energy efficient future are going to come out of the feedstock, out of this natural resource. So, I think Tim is right to be concerned about. We all need to be concerned about climate change. It's a reality, and if we don't confront that, we're going to pay the price. But in that energy efficient future, in that future that has a lower carbon footprint, we're going to need to have lightweight products, and those lightweight products are going to be made of the natural resource that happens to lie beneath Pennsylvania. So I think it's probably a good bet that we will need to rely on that natural resource for the next 20 years.
And then back to just the fiscal side of this, you know, obviously you haven't gone to the bond market yet. You haven't, you know, this is not in action, but there have been projections your administration has made about how much this is going to cost the Commonwealth overall. Back in January, there was an estimate that it would be around $7.2 billion, which is a lot of interest. Is that still somewhere in the realm of accurate?
Yeah, I haven't done the math on that. That's sort of like looking at a mortgage and saying over 30 years for a $150,000 home, you're going to end up paying $300,000 because you have the accumulated interest even at a low rate, which Pennsylvania can now borrow at. Even at a low rate over a long enough period of time, you are going to build up some money. The question is, how much are we going to pay for not preventing floods? How much are we going to pay? What's the opportunity cost for not having kids who have access to the internet? If they don't have access to broadband and we end up not having someone who can come up with a cure for a disease that affects our families, what's the cost of that? So I think overall this is a fair cost.
I want to go to Ed for a social media question before we're up on our first break.
Hi, Governor. We have a question from Danette Reed. Are you aware of the growing number of food insecure college students in our Commonwealth? Are there any plans at the state level to address this issue?
Absolutely. I am. Not only people in my administration, but my wife and I are both focused on this. And we've done, in fact, my wife is on a college board and struggling with the issues of food insecurity, especially with college students. And it's really an interesting and painful issue.
So what's the plan to address it?
Well, we're doing things. It turns out that Pennsylvania has already done some things. We have the Agriculture Department. We're using food surplus to go to areas of food insecurity. Frankly, the area of student food insecurity is new to me, and I'm sure there are people out there who have known about this for much longer than I have. But this is something that I think Pennsylvania is, you know, agriculture is our biggest industry. This is something that we can and should do something about.
Okay, well, thank you, Governor. We're coming up here on our first break. We're going to get into a lot more issues in just a moment. You are listening to Ask Governor Wolf. It's a show produced by Keystone Crossroads. That's a partnership of WHYY, WITF, WPSU, WESA, and PA Post. Welcome back to Ask Governor Wolf. I'm Kevin McCrory, joined in studio by Governor Tom Wolf, as well as WITF reporter Katie Meyer and Ed Mahan of the PA Post. The phone lines are open. We want to hear your questions. Reach us at 1-800-729-7532. We're on Twitter using the hashtag AskGovWolf. As many Pennsylvanians know, your Lieutenant Governor John Fetterman has visited every county in the state to talk about legalizing recreational marijuana. His report is supposed to come out soon. What is your specific position on this?
I'm waiting to see what the report says. They're working on it right now, and he's done a phenomenal job of going around to every county. People compare us to New York and New Jersey, and they've tried to push forward on legalization of recreational marijuana. And in both cases, I think the efforts have so far stalled. And I think that's because what they did was try to sort of impose a top-down solution. In Pennsylvania, I think the lieutenant governor is pushing a bottoms-up, asking Pennsylvanians what they want. So he's gone to all 67 counties. We have had over 30,000 visits and ideas coming in on our website from Pennsylvanians. So they're putting the report together to say exactly what the meetings and what the consensus is. And then our job is to sit down and work on the next step. And the Lieutenant Governor and I meet regularly to talk about this.
I mean, you don't need a report, though, to understand the issue and to understand how people feel about it and think about it. So isn't it your job to, you know, be a leader who takes a position and says, I think this is the right or wrong thing for these reasons?
Yeah, but I think I was elected by the people of Pennsylvania to actually do their will. While I hold this office in trust, I can't get ahead of what the people of Pennsylvania want. So I think it's important to do what Lieutenant Governor Fetterman did, and that is go around and ask the people of Pennsylvania what they actually want in this. And then I think at that point, it's our job to turn that into a set of recommendations, and we will.
Are there things about it that you're skeptical about, for instance?
I think there are things we can learn from other states. I think, for example, Colorado, it's been a big difference to them in terms of revenues, but they've learned some things about different forms of recreational marijuana in the form of gummy bears, for example, that kids take or pets eat. It's not really helpful. So what do we do about things like that? Can we learn from those examples of other states? If, in fact, we want to move forward with this, what are the things we ought to do it right? I think we're learning from states like Washington that there are certain ways you want to tax it, and maybe other ways that could actually have the perverse consequence of driving it further underground. You don't want to do that either. So there are a lot of things that I think we have to learn, and I think there's no premium, or there's no benefit to actually rushing into this. We want to do it right. Okay. If we do it, we want to do it right.
There's been a lot of conversation in the recent week about this general assistance program. Mm-hmm. It's something Katie Meyer has been following on a day-to-day basis. Katie?
Sure. So general assistance, as you know, Governor, a program that gives fairly small amounts of cash to certain poor people who don't qualify for other assistance or are not on other assistance at that point. Republicans passed a bill in the House. I know they plan to pass it in the Senate as well. It repeals the program, and it also includes important funding for Philadelphia hospitals and other medical assistance. This is a new approach for them. What are you going to do?
Yeah, I'm still looking at that. I obviously support cash assistance. When the Supreme Court ruled that, I guess it was taken away back in 2012, sometime around then, I oversaw it's putting it back into place. And I think that created a confrontation with the Republicans who don't want to keep it. Mm-hmm. So we just disagree. And they are pursuing a pretty smart tactic of embedding it in a code bill that actually includes things that are really important to communities like Philadelphia, saying, okay, you know, your choice. You want, you know, tens of millions of dollars for hospitals for the same people who need cash assistance, or cash assistance. It's a Hobson's choice. So I'm trying to figure out what I can do. I'm a big supporter of cash assistance.
Do you have a sense of what your options are going forward in this negotiation?
We are still. I'm not just saying this to put you off. We're literally still talking about what our options are, because what we are between a rock and a hard place here. You have Republicans in both the Senate and the House, majority of Republicans in both the Senate and House, who really want to scuttle it, and I want to keep it. So what do we do?
Now, during your budget address this year in February, you put a big premium on workforce development, on personal responsibility. Some might think that's at odds with a cash assistance program.
I'm not sure how those two things are connected. I think if somebody is in need, the cash assistance program is for people in dire straits and who need that. This is something, by all means, teach a person to fish and you can eat for a lifetime, give somebody a fish and you have one meal. I mean, that's true. But those two things are not incompatible. There are times in everybody's life when you need some help, you need a hand up. And I think there are organizations, including the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, that ought to be in a position to extend that hand when those times arise.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about election security.
Let's.
So you've went into a deal with the federal government essentially to say that every county in this state needs to update their voting machines. We've talked to a lot of people who feel like that might be just an unfunded mandate. One of those people is Kendra Gibson. She's a judge of elections in Middletown, Dauphin County.
The systems that we currently have work well. People like them. They're not, quote unquote, broken. So what really was the purpose, just to add an extra piece of paper to the voting process that we currently have? Because the millions of dollars it's going to take to get all these machines in place for 2020 elections could be used elsewhere.
I think it's a good point. It should not be an unfunded mandate. So that's why I put $75 million into the budget request, actually $15 million a year for 5 years, to help pay for this. The federal government has put up $14 million. We're working with the vendors approved by the different counties so that they have a choice to do some financing so that you don't have to pay this all at once. The idea and the hope is that we can do this in a way that the counties do get significant support in terms of funding for this. But this is something that we have to worry about. A paper trail is actually important, because whatever else we do in our democracy, if people don't have confidence that democracy is actually honest, that's a problem. Or if others can sort of skew the outcome of elections, that's not going to be a good thing.
Is that conjecture at this point, though? There's no proof that, you know, our election machines have been hacked.
Yeah, not in Pennsylvania, no proof. But I think there's enough concern about that the Department of Homeland Security and the Trump administration is actually pushing this. This is one of those few areas where I agree with the Trump administration, and I think they're absolutely right. We need a paper trail. We need to give people confidence throughout Pennsylvania that their vote is being counted, and if there's any question, there's a record that they can go back and check.
Well, and on this, with the machines with voter verifiable paper records, I mean, some of our machines in Pennsylvania already have those. Why do those need to be replaced?
I think the Department of State is working with each county, this is a good opportunity to look at new machines. There are some that do, you're right, have a paper trail. The question is, you know, is this an opportunity to actually upgrade the machines and make the voting process more secure? Again, the Department of Homeland Security thinks this is something that we ought to be doing. I recognize that this cannot be an unfunded mandate. This has to be something that we do as good a job as we can to support the counties in their efforts to invest in new machines.
Let's take a phone call. Victor is on the line from Lancaster. No, he dropped out. Ed, do we have something on social?
Yeah, this is election related as well. It's from Jen DeVore. She says, "Hey, Governor Tom Wolf, last year you said you'd like to see legislation to improve voter participation. What's your status with these ideas, and what can we do as citizens to help push them forward?" And then she quote tweets something, a tweet from you about same-day voter registration, or same-day registration, automatic registration, and no excuse absentee voting.
Yeah, I still remain wedded to those things. I think there's some... and Katie, you and Katie know that there's some committees that are actually, I think, in the Senate that are dealing with all of these issues right now, including some additional ones like open primaries, where you can be an independent and vote in either party. The idea I have, and that I think more and more legislators have, is that whatever your partisan identity or affiliation, we need to make the election process as open and robust as we can. This is democracy. We want people to vote. We want people to come out to vote. That's a basic responsibility of citizenship, and shame on us if we make that harder. So I'm for doing all the things that she mentioned to make it easier.
And just to follow up on her question, I guess, how do you feel about the progress of those?
Well, the progress is really, it's in the hands of the legislature right now. The Senate... in one of their committees is actually dealing with this right now, and it's not fast enough for me, but things don't move instantaneously in state government, and things, I believe, are actually moving. I think there are people who want to make changes, and I'm confident that sooner or later we're going to get it.
Okay, let's try another phone call. We have Elizabeth from media asking an environmental question. Elizabeth, are you there?
Nope. Elizabeth? I think we're on the wrong line, maybe.
No. Elizabeth?
Maybe not.
No.
Well, Elizabeth's question was, why are we allowing fracking to pollute our water? Do we want to take that?
Sure. Are you saying, do we have time?
Sure.
We have time.
No, I think that we have to do this right. I mean, this is the way, a way of extracting the natural gas that lies beneath our feet. It's something that as I said earlier, could go into creating the feedstock for the products that are going to be an integral part of our energy efficient future. We have that natural resource here. We have to extract that in a way that does not compromise our environment. And I think we can.
All right.
Are the phones lines up? Do we have a sense? All right, let's try line 5. Barbara from Philadelphia has a question about the criminal justice system. Barbara, are you there?
Yes, I would like to know about the gentleman in jail and state row for life. What you plan on doing to help them to get back on the street?
Yeah,
recidivism for people coming off of life sentences.
I'm sorry. I thought the question was for all the folks. There are a lot of people, many people who are in prison with life sentences without parole, who probably shouldn't be there. So I have already issued and signed more commutations than any governor, I think, in 25 years. And this is something I know the lieutenant governor, who is chair of the Board of Pardons. Pennsylvania's pardon process works differently than other states. The governor does not issue the pardon without a recommendation from this Board of Pardons, which is made up of 5 people, including the lieutenant governor and the attorney general. I think there's a genuine desire to address this issue, and a recognition that there are a lot of people who have spent a long time in jail who should not have.
And is there anything we can do to prevent the violent crime and the crime that ends up putting people into jails in the first place?
Well, you're talking about 2 different things. There are a lot of people in jail who didn't commit violent crimes. But the violent crimes, I think we're talking about, like in the tragic events in Philadelphia this past weekend, there's too much gun violence.
Yeah.
And so I've been and continue to be a strong supporter of measures to restrict access to guns for people who shouldn't have them. I mean, right now you can own a gun and be on the no-fly list. Now, I don't know what sense that makes. We don't have universal background checks. We need to plug the gun show loophole in Pennsylvania, and people should not be allowed to buy under any circumstances military-style weapons.
And when you talk about these gun issues, though, there's surely many, many Pennsylvanians who use weapons responsibly and appropriately. And,
sure.
And are you saying that they should be somehow restricted to, or how would we ensure that they would have their rights?
A universal background check does not, making sure that people are not suffering a mental illness when they purchase a gun does not limit in any way a responsible gun owner's right to buy a gun and go out and have a day of hunting. What I'm trying to do is address issues that I think increasingly members of even the NRA are recognizing, that there is a responsible way to address gun ownership, just the same way as there are responsible ways to address the issue of car ownership.
And how about, you know, the idea that cities such as Philadelphia or Pittsburgh should be allowed to pass laws on their own that would, you know, be outside of the state law?
Well, I'm not a lawyer, and I don't pretend to be able to weigh in on those constitutional issues, but it seems to me that if places, and I support places like Pittsburgh and Philadelphia does this, I would support that too, wanting to create their own gun safety legislation. I think that makes perfect sense.
Okay. Ed, are we seeing anything new on the social feed?
We have a question from @JoshBennett55. He asks, what is your thought on banning e-cigarettes like San Francisco? Would you want a statewide ban or just let the cities of Pennsylvania decide?
I don't have a position on that. I haven't thought about that.
Okay. Well, okay. We can also go to the phones as well. We've got Jude in Pittsburgh. Jude, are you on the line?
Hi.
Hi.
Am I on the air?
Yes,
you are.
Alrighty, so Governor Wolf, I want to know when we're going to ban plastic bags. As a Return Peace Corps volunteer, and I know you are one too, don't you think we really need to clean it up?
It's a great question. Depends on which plastic bags. A lot of them can be recycled. The ones that can't be, I'm as concerned as you are. There's plastic residue showing up in the bottom of the ocean. So this is an issue that we all have to worry about as part of worrying about what our climate future is going to be.
All right. And, Governor, we've obviously been dealing with the issue of minimum wage increase recently as a debate in the Capitol. You have a plan that would take it to $12 an hour, eventually to $15. There's pushback from Republicans. Obviously, we heard from Sandy Burke from Edinburgh in Erie County. She says, I own a small business. I employ approximately 90 people. I operate on a tight budget, have concerns over this increase. All of the employees make minimum wage. We would need to directly pass this along to the consumer and feel like our prices are nearly as high as we can offer without losing business. What would you say to Sandy Burke?
Well, first of all, I was a business owner up until 4.5 years ago, and I never paid my workers minimum wage. And I realized that was a benefit to me. So I would suggest that maybe you look at your workers and that they might benefit from an increase. They might actually work more productively and better.
But if the margins are that tight, that may be very difficult.
Second thing is, if you're looking at Pennsylvania from the outside, I think there's some things that we need to be worried about in terms of the optics. I have been calling, for example, for a corporate net income tax reduction. Since I was governor, and I think people on the outside, an entrepreneur looking at Pennsylvania, can look at Pennsylvania and say, you have a high income net corporate net income tax rate. You obviously don't want me to come to Pennsylvania, and that's not true. And I think the same thing is true of a worker looking at Pennsylvania, and she sees a $7.25 minimum wage, and she says, well, you're obviously not interested in giving workers a fair shot, so that's one state I'll steer clear of. I don't want that. I think the same thing is true of non-discrimination. I think we need to do the things to make Pennsylvania attractive to people who want to come here and work, build jobs, build businesses, build families, and careers, and anything we do to depress that is bad for all of us.
So you're skeptical that this is actually a hardship on small businesses? You think that's a talking point?
I ran lumber yards. I never paid minimum wage.
And now, Governor, on the politics of this, and we have about a minute left until the break, Republicans have said they don't want to go to $12, much less $15. How low are you willing to go in these budget negotiations or negotiations in the future to compromise?
I'm willing to have conversations, but again, I think we need to make sure that we're not embarrassing ourselves. Right now, we're at $7.25. There is nobody around us in our region close to that. I got a note from somebody, I think on the New York-Pennsylvania border, said that, you know, if I'm working in New York, it's $11 in some sense minimum wage. In Pennsylvania, it's $7.25. What's up with that? And she's right. It's something that is embarrassing. It's a black eye for us.
Okay, plenty more to get to. We're coming up against our second break here. You are listening to Ask Governor Wolf. It's a show produced by Keystone Crossroads, a partnership of WHYY, WITF, WPSU, WESA, and PA Post. Welcome back to Ask Governor Wolf. I'm Kevin McCrory, joined in studio by Governor Tom Wolf, as well as WITF reporter Katie Meyer and Ed Mahan of the PA Post. The phone lines are open. We want to hear your questions. Reach us at 1-800-729-7532 or on Twitter using the hashtag AskGovernorWolf. Now, outside of the budget debate, and we've been talking about a lot of that today so far, we tried to speak to people across the state, getting a sense of, you know, what are everyday families worrying about, thinking about on a week-to-week, day-to-day basis. We met Dawn Nelson. She's from Center County, and here's what she had to say.
I ended up taking care of my mother in her later years, and I'd like to know what the governor would try to do to help lower the cost of nursing homes, assisted living, you know, just a general care for our senior citizens, because many of them can't afford it. A lot of it falls back onto the family like it did me.
Thoughts on that, Governor?
Yeah, that Dawn raises a really important question. I'm not sure. I think one of the things that I would like to do is make it easier for people to pursue home care as a career. I've done that. I think that's cheaper than an institutionalized care. We need to support people like Dawn who are taking care of their own family members, their own parents. That's something that I think is really important. I've done that. There are more people aging in their homes now than were before. That's something that seniors want, but it's also less expensive from the public point of view. Again, I'm not trying to dodge the question. I think this is something that's really important, and I will continue to work on it as I have in the past 4 years.
You know, obviously, we are a state that is old statistically, and you see that in some of the rural areas where, again, seniors say that they're very hard pressed by property taxes, and at the same time, you see younger people moving either to the cities or out of the state. What do you think about the population loss that's occurred in some parts of the state over the years, and specifically how we can help those senior citizens who may be in communities that are struggling to pay their school income tax or their school property taxes?
Yeah, well, there are a couple things you brought up there. One is the property, the need for property tax reform, and I think that's absolutely essential, because anybody who is forced to leave their home because they can't afford to pay the local taxes, that's unconscionable. We've got to do something about that. I believe we must, and I hope we do. The other things about, you mentioned young people moving out of rural areas to suburban or urban areas. I think to a certain extent they're pursuing job and career opportunities, but to a certain extent they're fleeing the lack or the low quality of life that maybe they're concerned with, it, which is why I think we need to bring broadband to all parts of Pennsylvania. You should not be consigned to a life without technology simply because you choose to live in one of our beautiful rural areas or a nice small town. So I think we have got to make sure that we're investing adequately in infrastructure. Again, this brings me back to Restore Pennsylvania. It's why this is so important. That $4.5 billion, whatever the cost of not doing anything, more and more is going to be much greater than the cost of doing it now.
And your hope would be that having broadband in these rural areas would attract more employers and would create more jobs in these areas? Is that the hope?
There are about five areas that I think. First of all, in terms of transportation, we're moving into the era of autonomous vehicles. You cannot have autonomous vehicles if you don't have GPS. You can't have GPS if you don't have access to broadband. Telemedicine, rural health is important. How do we make sure that living in a rural area does not keep you from getting the best quality health care? We're going to need to have broadband. Education. We're talking about snow days. You can't have cyber snow days if you don't have access to broadband. Your teacher can't send home assignments grade your papers online if you don't have access to the internet. We want people to be farmers because agriculture is our biggest industry, and we're smack dab in the middle of this huge market for our goods. New York, Philadelphia, Baltimore, Washington, Pittsburgh. How do we keep people wanting to live on farms if they
and
can't?
And yet we've
and
seen
businesses.
Tremendous stress on farmers, especially dairy farmers in Pennsylvania in recent years.
Yes, which is why I brought up, and I think the legislature will pass the first state-based farm bill that's focused on actually addressing the needs of farmers where they live. For example, putting money into the Center for Dairy Excellence. Now, we have a lot to do. I put out a plan for Pennsylvania agriculture. And we need to fund that. We need to recognize I think Pennsylvania has been ignoring just sort of paying lip service to agriculture for too long. Agriculture is a central industry for us, and Pennsylvania can be a big deal, make a big deal, big difference in agriculture especially in the eastern part of the United States.
I heard you say the word cyber there, so I have to ask you about cyber charters in Pennsylvania. There's been a recent very damning report done by the Stanford University Credo Institute.
I read it.
It found, you know, very minimal academic growth being made at cyber charters in Pennsylvania. At this point, are cyber charters a good idea at all?
No. I think when I first became governor, I proposed dramatic cyber charter reform, and the Republicans pushed back. Now what's interesting is the Republicans are starting to engage on this. I think they're recognizing that this is something that needs real reform. And the report that you cited from Stanford points, I think you were being very kind. They're showing less than public school returns on the investment in cyber charter schools. So there's a lot of work to be done. And I think the recognition that we need cyber charter reform has broadened to the point that it's included many Republicans who in the past might have opposed
it. Are you saying they should be abolished?
I'm saying they should be reformed.
Okay.
Because we should recognize that they have to live up to the same standards that we want our public schools to live up to. That what we're trying to do is give children, our kids, and increasingly continuous learners, adults, the chance to upgrade their skills, their talents, and we need to make sure that we're providing all the opportunities to do that. If we're not doing that efficiently, then that's a problem.
Your reforms have focused on how much money they get from the state. I mean, we're talking, though, about academic performance. So how do you ensure that kids going to those schools are getting a good education no matter what they're being paid?
No, I'm not sure what you mean. My focus is on money. I think one of, I think, the important things is we have to look at how we're doing. And that's not just a matter of, you can't throw money at anything and say, I'm automatically going to get a good outcome. But you can't take money away from things and say, I'm going to get a good outcome either. We've got to make sure that we recognize that, as you say, one-third of our budget is in education. We're a limited government, democratic, with a small d, form of government. There are very few things that, that government ought to do, but one of them is to make sure that we're investing adequately in education.
All right, I want to go to the phone lines. We see Todd in Lancaster on line 5 asking about liquor store privatization. Todd, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Hi.
Hi.
Hi, Todd.
Hi. I wanted to ask Governor Wolf whether or not he supports selling off and privatizing all of the PA wine and spirit stores.
Thanks, Todd.
So I'm the first one who's made any change in our liquor system since Prohibition with the, you can now buy wine and beer in the grocery stores, convenience stores, and that's something that you couldn't do forever. The thing about privatization is I think that Pennsylvania has an asset here owned by Pennsylvanians. We need to make it run better. We need to modernize it. And what we did in the modernization program of a couple years ago, I think, is a first step in that, that direction. Full privatization at this point would be, I think, a giveaway that would hurt Pennsylvanians. And so I'm not for that.
Well, a lot of Republicans do support privatization quite strongly, including some in the leadership in the House and Senate. One of the things that they often argue is that there would be maybe a chance for Pennsylvania to make a profit off of that. You don't think that would be the case?
No, it could be. But right now, I think we need to make our system better. And to the extent we make it better, more profitable, if we ever got to a point, if some future governor decides that's something that he or she wants to do, there would actually be a return on that. Right now, I think the job at hand is to make the system work better.
And how do you make it work better? Is that refurbishing stores like we've done? Is that extending hours? Is that something more fundamental?
I think it's those things, but I think it's also, I think moving wine and beer to grocery stores and
which
beer.
Which you already did.
Right. That kind of thing is making the system better. The sale of alcohol in Pennsylvania has, of wine and beer has gone up, and that has helped the Liquor Control Board and their contribution to the general fund.
And I have one more sort of related question. When we talk about making money off of industries like, for instance, wine and spirits or like gambling, things like that, often it's called a sin tax. And it's relatively controversial, but we've expanded these things in Pennsylvania. We're making much more money on them than we used to. Do you think it's a good thing?
I grew up in a church that did not believe in card playing, so you're asking me this? I was, when I was, actually for about a year and 8 months, I was Secretary of Revenue, and the lottery is in the Revenue Department, and that question always came to me. And I think it's an interesting question. In terms of that particular form of gambling, the lottery, it replaced the numbers racket. And so the numbers racket was going on in communities all across Pennsylvania. Is it something that you know, you think ought to be a normal part of? Well, I grew up thinking that's not what you ought to do. But as long as people are doing it, maybe we ought to regulate it. So that's that area. Before I became Secretary of Revenue, even the legislature decided they were going to legalize slot machines. Mm-hmm. And then after that, table games after I was Secretary of Revenue. So I was not part of that. That's where we are. And
but you've been part of, for instance, video game terminals, lots of things.
Yeah, you're right. Each year, once you open that door,
it keeps rolling faster.
And I think I'm not sure exactly where this is headed, but the state does encompass a number of different options for people who want to gamble.
Mm-hmm.
Ed, we have anything popping on social media?
Yeah, we have a question from Nathan Herrick. He describes himself as an assistant EMS chief. He's asking about SR6. There was a legislative study last session. He says it was released in 2018, detailing a crisis in the fire and EMS in PA. But so far, there hasn't been any substantial legislation introduced to address the report's recommendations, especially regarding EMS funding. Is this an issue Governor Wolf will take on?
Yeah, okay. I have to admit I haven't read that, so I don't know. I'll read that and I will decide. So if one of the things with EMS around the state is that it's harder and harder to recruit people to become EMS technicians, either locally or certainly at the state level. So this is just something that I think we need to work on. And if that is part of what SR6 is talking about, then that is something that we have an urgent need.
Do you think state action is needed to help the EMS community in Pennsylvania?
Absolutely.
Sure.
We heard a lot of comments in questions we had out before this show began about the Berks County Detention Center. Folks feeling like you should take a stronger stand on placing some sort of emergency stop order on that, or advocating harder against that. What's your position?
Yeah, I am against the detention of families in the Berks County Detention Center. That is a county, not a state facility. So I am governed by the rules of law here. I don't own that. The state does not own that.
But you could certainly be putting pressure on them in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
And are you?
Yeah.
And how?
Well, by what I can do, we send inspectors continuously, and I'm even looking at making sure that when we send inspectors, we're inspecting it the way we should inspect it.
One of the things, and Kevin mentioned this, but a declaration of emergency in that facility is one of the things you could do if you found a clear and present danger. Some of the people who want the facility shut down have said holding families in detention is dangerous. It's clear in studies that this is not good for children. So they think there is cause for a declaration like that. What do you say to that?
Yeah, again, I'm not a lawyer, but the general counsel in Pennsylvania says that I don't have a leg to stand on there.
Okay.
Okay. I want to take a few short answer questions here before the hour ends. If you could kind of keep your answers concise and beautiful as you have been.
Good luck.
Do you think teachers and administrators in Pennsylvania schools should be allowed to carry firearms?
No.
What would you do to prevent that?
Well,
It seems like state law could be clearer, I guess.
Yeah, state law could be clearer. I think there is a bill making its way through the Senate right now and wants to allow people who have been trained in gun ownership and firearms, whose job it is to protect the safety of the schools, to carry firearms, but they need to be trained. I think the random arming of civilians is not a good idea.
Well, they will say that they are trained.
Who will say that?
The folks who support this idea say we will train the teachers to do this appropriately.
I'd like to see that plan.
Governor, next short answer question here. Who do you prefer in the field of 2020 Democratic candidates?
I have not made a choice, and I won't. I will come out for the winner, the ultimate winner, in the after the convention, and support him or her to the utmost of my ability.
Very disappointing answer.
If you could go back to your first year in office and do that budget negotiation process again, which was very protracted, very drama filled, what would you do different?
I'm not sure I'd do anything different. I think
that was a 9-month impasse.
Yeah, I think I needed to draw a line in the sand. We were in a dreadful situation, had a huge structural budget deficit. We were hemorrhaging funds every year. We would pay for last year's expenditures more and more with next year's revenues. You can't do that on a sustained basis. And so what I have done is actually brought Pennsylvania back from the brink of insolvency to, I think, a good place. We're going to put real money into the rainy day fund, into our cookie jar, our savings account this year. Last year was the first time in over a decade that we did that. And
Speaking of using next year's funds to pay for last year's expenses, you asked for a supplemental appropriation for this current fiscal year, which will be paid out of next fiscal year, which seems to be kind of what you were just saying is bad.
Yeah.
Why did that happen? What's to prevent it?
Yeah, that's a good question. First of all, let me just point out the expenditures in the end looks like we underestimated expenditures. And most of the areas we underestimated, there were two big ones, the stuff that we do that's coming from the federal government. According to a formula, we estimated what that would be. We underestimated. We also estimated that we would have access to a one-time.
Got to wrap you up there, Governor. Thank you so much
for
this hour.
But net, we're over.
Thank you for joining us. You've been listening to Ask Governor Wolf.